You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, the lottery happened the other day, and I found myself not caring. The Steve Nash trade is completely behind us at this point, you know, other than watching whatever that number 10 player turns into moving forward. But it was kind of nice to have a lottery that I just didn't have to worry about at all.
Yeah, it was... The only thing I had, I was just like, please, God, don't give the Celtics the second or third pick in context of everything else, and or Philly at number one, right? That was my only kind of vested interest in it. And even then, it was nice to not be like, because it was such a tough position as a fan the last few years, because it wasn't like, you know, like Dallas, you know, they dropped a couple spots, or Memphis dropped a couple spots. It was either like top three pick or nothing at all, and everyone laughs at you. So it was nice to not have that. Those were the most stressful. That was probably the most stressful cost of the Steve Nash trade, was having to sit through three lotteries hoping they'd keep the pick.
Yeah, poor Harrison was already having a follicle problem, and I'm sure that pulling his hair out over the lottery. all right. Well, today's show, we're going to talk about Isaiah Thomas. And obviously, he didn't start the season with the Lakers. So we're going to essentially talk about him from the time he arrived, what we hoped that the Lakers would be getting. And we can go over some of the trade in that part of the conversation as well. And then the second segment is what we actually saw from him. And then the third one is whether or not he showed us enough to make it a decent proclamation to consider him in free agency this summer. As always, make sure you guys are following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Silver Screen and Roll, Lakers Outsiders. You can follow me on Twitter at Anthony Irwin LA. You can follow Pete on Twitter at Laker Film Room, and subscribe to his YouTube page. All of that good stuff. Let's start here. The Lakers make the trade. And I think at this point, it's inarguably a win for the Lakers, the trade as it went down. They shed the salary that they needed to be players in this upcoming offseason. They pick up a first-round pick when a lot of people were thinking that they were going to have to give up a first-round pick to get rid of Jordan Clarkson's salary. And, you know, they got some useful moments out of Channing Frye, and Isaiah Thomas didn't completely wreck the locker room. So it's a win, right? Like, I can't think of very many trades that have been this one-sided, short of the Brooklyn and Boston one from a few years ago.
Yeah, it was a super low-risk trade, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there were very few versions of this where it would have worked out disastrously. So even... like, not in hindsight, I thought it was a great trade at the time.
Yep.
And, you know, so even a guy like IT, you know, he was a top five MVP vote getter just the year before. Give him a shot. If he doesn't work out, he's an expiring contract. You bring a good veteran, you know, good veteran presence in Channing Frye in, you know, and then you get that pick while shedding salary. I mean, it checked off all of these different boxes that it was just found money from that point.
Yeah. You know, one of the points, I think you were the one who made it recently, that I think should be really hammered home here, is this was a first year. This was a rookie front office that showed now they were going up against a first year GM too in Kobe Altman, but they showed a really good ability to negotiate here, because Altman just wanted Nance essentially. And the Lakers got him to give up a first round pick and take on salary for Nance essentially. And look, that's all you're looking from rookies. This has been a theme at this point, right? All we've been looking for from this front office and from rookies, period, is, all right, how can we see how they're going to develop moving forward? And that was a great first step in their first acquisition or trade negotiation outside of like Magic handling trade deadline, you know, the few hours that he had to manage there. This was really good to see. Now, from the perspective of him, we can address Channing Frye here briefly too. But from both of those guys, what were you hoping to get from Isaiah Thomas and Channing Frye?
Isaiah Thomas, I looked at him as kind of like a sneak preview on the offensive end. Prior to his acquisition, the Lakers were one of the worst offenses in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And while he comes with a ton of flaws, which I know we're about to get into, he was a guy who could score off of ball screens at high volume and could be a dual threat as a guy, you know, against a drop coverage, could pull up for a three, did a nice job of finding, like, Zubats showed some value for the first time when he was next to Isaiah Thomas as a role man. You know, him and Julius had a good chemistry for similar reasons. So what I wanted to see is if the Lakers are going to be signing a guy like Paul George, for example, who I've been just mowing down the footage on him the last few days. Paul George is a guy who can score off of ball screens, that can also run off of screens and be off of the ball. But they didn't have that before they acquired Isaiah Thomas. We talked about KCP the other day, and KCP can't do that because he doesn't have the ball handling, as we touched on. So Isaiah Thomas, even though he's a foot shorter, kind of represented the type of player that would be next to, ideally, Alonzo Ball, if in a like two max scenario or even one max scenario. And I don't know, I like what I saw in terms of how the, not just Isaiah Thomas, but how the team functioned within, like, around that guy being kind of the center of the universe on offense.
Yeah, I pretty much – all I really wanted to see from Isaiah Thomas is don't come and wreck the chemistry, right? Because like the one concern that I had at the time of the trade was this guy is going to be gunning for his next contract. And, you know, you got a couple kind of iffy quotes here and there from him saying that, you know, the Lakers would be better if they gave him the type of usage that he had in Boston. Like, I always thought that was a pretty asinine point to try to make. But for the most part, he was a good soldier and handled his role and handled his time in LA professionally. And you know, on-court production and that stuff, the Lakers weren't, they were pretty obviously not going to be a playoff team at that point. So really, all I, you know, if he came and started to show some flashes of what he showed in Boston, great. But for the most part, I didn't want him to be a net negative, and I think he met that expectation. We'll get to how he and Frye worked out specifically in on-court production here in a second. So from you know, if you were to compare it to the time of the trade moving forward, would you say that Thomas exceeded, met, or fell short of your expectations with the Lakers?
I'd say he met or maybe slightly fell short. You know, I understand he was coming off of an injury, and that was, you know, one of the main reasons he was moved twice before he got to the Lakers. He was a fantastic finisher around the basket in Boston. And when he's right, like, that's one of the things I always marveled at with him, is that he was a guy that could finish at all these crazy angles, which you have to at his size, going up against the rim protectors around the league at their size. And that was something that he lost, that, right? That's not something that he regained throughout his time as a Laker. But again, I do think that he filled that role of being a scorer off of ball screens. And, you know, he, after some dust up at the beginning of, right after he was traded, of his agent texting Rachel Nichols saying he was never going to come off of the bench, he came off of the bench and he didn't really complain about it. And he, you know, he filled his role and he was a positive influence. I think you can even see in his interactions with guys on social media, with the Lakers on there, that like they get along. And I saw that in the locker room this year too, that he was a liked guy, which was not the reputation that he had. So I think he exceeded my expectations in the locker room and maybe underperformed them slightly on the court. I know you are not exactly the president of his fan club, so relative to your expectations, where did he fall on that?
One thing I learned this Lakers season and in podcasting is to set expectations at a basement level so that you can't be let down or let people down, right? And so with Isaiah Thomas, like I said, my expectations was, or my hope was, just don't come over here and be a net negative. And, you know, aside from those random kind of moments where – and look, here's the thing. Thomas, what got Thomas to this point is that chip on his shoulder. Like, you aren't going to be successful being 5'4", playing in a Giants league, in a Giants game, without the utmost belief in yourself at all times, and anybody doubting you, you almost have to be hyper defensive about that, even though he doesn't play very good defense. And so, you know, with what the Lakers were getting, I was hoping that that wouldn't play a role in how things went out here. And again, to his credit, it didn't. So really, I would say he exceeded my expectations in that respect. Now, in what I was hoping to see in terms of actual production, I think you put it really well when you said I wanted a sneak preview of the offense, kind of. And I wanted to see one thing that I really am interested in learning is what type of player needs to be alongside this iteration of Lonzo Ball. Now, as Lonzo develops and you know, maybe he gets more consistent with his jumper or finishing at the rim, that player that you need evolves, or I guess devolves. And I thought one thing that we learned is a version of Isaiah Thomas that is a little bit taller, obviously, so that he isn't such a liability on defense, is kind of exactly what you want to pair Lonzo Ball with. And it just made me all the more excited for the Paul George sweepstakes, because now I think Isaiah Thomas handles the pick and roll better than Paul George does, being a more natural quote unquote point guard. You know, he's the size of a point guard, so he had to learn those skills a little bit more than Paul George did. But I saw that, look, Lonzo can work with somebody who handles the ball a little bit more than you would traditionally think with a lead guard as Lonzo is. And we saw that, and you know, it seemed to work. And like the offense got inarguably better, right, after Isaiah Thomas got here, and that type of impact matters.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something where he came to the Lakers with that chip on his shoulder, even from the interactions that he had in Boston and in Cleveland. And he was able to kind of fit in a way that I didn't expect him to, or that I was a little bit worried about. One thing I always, you know, kind of crack on you with the Kobe stuff, right? But I do think he has that similar mentality. This is a place where I'm not just trying to get under your skin, in that, like you said, being as short as he is. So like I met him for the first time, and I'm a short guy, as most of the listeners know. And I was like, whoa, like when I met him in person, he's shorter than he's listed. Like he's probably 5'7", mm-hmm. and he might not be that. And so like that dude at like 5'7" put up like 30 a game. So crazy. I just have, I guess, a baseline respect level for him to be able to do that in his healthiest days. But when you have a guy like that, the downside of that is that he doesn't like kind of gracefully age the way that Kobe did not gracefully age. It's like you don't go from being the man to being a good role player to being the plucky vet at the end of the bench that's mentoring other guys. Like you go from being like a number one guy to being an absolute disaster while putting up number one guy type of shots. And we saw glimpses of that, and it kind of makes me worry about possibly the future with him. But I think all in all, I mean, Lakers went 8-9. They played the best offense of the season when he was active and with the team before all of the injuries. You know, like all in all, I'm very happy with what we got out of him.
Yep, and we'll briefly touch on Channing Frye here. I'm not going to spend an entire show to talk about Channing Frye. Sorry, everybody, if you were expecting that. But I thought Channing Frye, I was surprised that he didn't ask to be bought out, because I think he could help, you know, maybe not in the series that we're watching now, though I think Cleveland kind of misses his shooting, obviously. I think he could have helped some of these playoff teams, and it surprised me that wasn't a direction that he or the Lakers seemed that inclined to go in. I was really happy with what Frye brought on. I thought he showed enough that like if he's like a minimum type player next season, that I would be perfectly happy bringing him back.
Absolutely. And he's the type of guy that, like, again, he's a guy that gets along well. He's a real pro. And I think that if he's like your 14th or 15th guy or whatever, and he's not a total stiff at this point, right? Like when he got some run, he can still, you know, pick and pop, and he's an intelligent defender, if not an athletic one. You know, like he's the type of guy that you want at the end of your bench if he's not going to be a prospect that you're developing.
All right, so we're going to take a one last break here. When we come back, there might be some fireworks here, because I am adamantly he put it nicely when he said I wasn't the head of Isaiah Thomas's fan club. I am 100% bringing him back in any shape or form, and we'll see where Pete falls on that spectrum here in a second. All right, convince me. Is it because I'm of the opinion that I don't think he can play the role that he expects to play moving forward on a good NBA team. Is that too strong, or where would you, if that take is a 10 out of the hot take-a-tude scale, where would you lie in a scale?
Now, you know, man, I know it doesn't make for the greatest podcast show, but I don't entirely disagree with you. I think the version of the future where re-signing Isaiah Thomas is halfway smart is like if nobody comes here and you need to sign somebody to a one-year deal where he does play that role of being, you know, like the main scorer off of the bench. And even then he might be problematic, right? With it's one thing to be traded to a team with 30 games left in the season and be like, all right, well, you know, this is what I got to do. It's quite another to do that for 82 and throughout training camp and behind guys that you genuinely feel like you're better than, because that's just the type of guy that Isaiah Thomas is. He has to have that belief in himself. So, you know, I think that's the only real version of the future where, you know, it makes sense for him to sign a one-year deal and prove that he still has it, you know, in order to get a bigger contract down the line. But I also think with the type of defensive strategy that the Lakers employ with switching as much as they do, you just can't do that with Isaiah Thomas. I think the Lakers were third or fourth in the NBA in switches last year. And if you want to continue doing that going forward with any sense of, you know, capability, just he can't be on the team. So I know I'm agreeing with you more perhaps than you hoped I would, but let me ask you this. Is even in that future where the Lakers don't bring anybody back, do you still not think that he's worth bringing back?
No, because I just don't think I don't think it's worth the risk of offsetting or just messing up the one of the things that even Roni said that he really likes about this young Lakers team is they have incredible chemistry together. They throw jabs at each other on Twitter. The Fortnite thing, like people, you know, old people especially will say, "Well, I hate these athletes who play their video games." Like that stuff is really good. That type of team building stuff is really important. And I like that, you know, they have that type of relationship going on. And if you introduce somebody who now is playing on a deal that he isn't going to be happy with, like if he takes a one-year deal after claiming that he was getting ready for a Brinks truck to pull up to his front, to his driveway, like he's not going to be happy about that. He's still probably going to be looking for some version of that Brinks truck moving forward over the course of his career. And I just see the scenario where you get these random texts to Woj about how, you know, LeVar Ball keeps making problems that he isn't making in the Lakers locker room, and that, you know, he wonders whether or not Kuzma is actually hurt, if Kuzma like pulls a hammy or something weird like that. You know, I just he has this reputation across a few teams now. Sacramento, there were some whispers about how he handled that situation. Phoenix, same thing. Boston is the only place at this point that you didn't get those whispers. And obviously, we saw what happened in Cleveland. I just don't think he's worth the risk. I think his skill set can be found, or some version of his skill set. Maybe the ceiling isn't there with other options on the market or even in the trade market. But the downside isn't there with those options, and that's really what concerns me the most. I'd much rather just Isaiah, thank you for being a good dude while you were here. We're gonna buy out, sell high right now in that regard, and distance ourselves before it can go badly, and go from there. Again, and now look, if I'm being ridiculous with this, I'll cop to that. And if this take winds up biting me in the ass because it was too hard, and he winds up being a productive player next season, fine. But do you see that type of scenario playing out?
I could absolutely do that. I guess the one thing that I would say is that on a one-year deal, those things concern me less. Is if you find yourself in January next year, and again, this is I don't think there's much of a point in bringing him back if you get a Paul George, right? But say nobody comes and you need to kind of punt cap space. if it's January next year and he's griping about his playing time or the shots that he's getting or his role on the team or just being disruptive in a way, yeah, just let him go, man. Just do what you did with Bogut or anyone else. Like, the thing that I agree with you on is that in a situation like this where you're going to take a risk on a guy like that, you want like the home run version to be a grand slam, right? Mm-hmm. You want the payoff to be big enough to be like, all right, well, all of this is worth it. I would say on a one-year deal, it's not as big of a deal. But even then, I understand the rationale of like, are we really going to risk messing with the chemistry that Roni Turioff was talking about, which you're talking about, you know, in order for a guy like Isaiah Thomas when – the payoff is probably not that great, especially with his hip issues and his age and all of that. Like, if he was younger, you know, maybe you could be like, okay, you know, give him a year to get back on his feet. He can be part of the squad going forward. But, you know, 5'7" guys in their 30s.
Post-hip problems.
That's just the ceiling on that just isn't high enough to justify it. So I'd be fine on a one-year deal in that scenario. But beyond that, I think they could go in better directions, especially if they have other shot creators.
And then we kind of alluded to it with Channing Frye, but I'm you know, you can – there are concerns whether or not he might be full-on washed next season, and he showed some signs of that early in the season last year with Cleveland. But I'm perfectly fine. If the Lakers need a big to come off the bench and stretch the floor, I don't think they could do much better on a minimum deal than Channing Frye, realistically speaking.
Yeah, I mean, I the only other thing is if you have a young guy that you want to take a flyer on that's mm-hmm. a big, you know, like – like, I wouldn't want Channing Frye to take Thomas Bryant's spot, mm-hmm. and I don't think the Lakers would do that either. But if he's your third center on the roster, yeah, that's absolutely the guy that you want in that type of spot.
Yep. All right. And look, you might also get, like, Channing Frye podcast with Luke, and I think those would be really fun.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Luke and Jesse Mermes, like, that dynamic needs to happen over the airwaves at some point soon.
The whole Arizona crew is very entertaining in person, especially. It's like I'm shocked I haven't heard a bra or something like that at practice, because they are very bra type of guys. So Fry included to some extent.
A beer bong would be involved in some shape or form in that podcast.
I'm sure when the cameras aren't around, yeah. That's exactly what's happening.
All right, that'll do it for this episode of Locked On Lakers. We're heading into the weekend, so that means if you have any questions or comments, leave them on iTunes. You guys have been coming through in the clutch. I've had plenty of stuff to get to in regards to the Monday mailbag shows, so thank you guys for doing that, and keep that up. 5-star review, your question, I answer it. I wanted to ask you this, because you're a bit of a historian, Pete, and we have a couple minutes here to spare. I was asked whether this current Lakers team has more talent on it than the mid-90s, like Nick Van Exel, Eddie Jones teams. I said that they do, when they have a higher ceiling than that group did, but would you agree with that?
They have more young talent than those teams did. I think the place where those teams had the advantage is that they're veterans. Like, Sabalos made an all-star team when he was traded to the Lakers, and he was like 25, 26 years old at that point. Vlade was a good center. I think he made an all-star game after he left LA, but he was one of those guys that, you know, Eldon drove us crazy, but he was a good vet, you know. And the Lakers had a few guys like that where, you know, Van Exel was a ton of fun, and he was a very talented guy. Eddie Jones, same thing. But in terms of like the young guys, I also think that the one thing that we don't contextualize properly when comparing to those teams is, like, I think Van Exel was like 23 his rookie year, or I know Eddie Jones was, right? Mm-hmm. And most of those guys were at that point. That was before Garnett was the first guy in like 20 years to jump from preps to pros. Mm-hmm. And so you're talking about like older guys, much more finished products. Like when Nick Van Exel was Lonzo Ball's age, he was at, I think, Trinity Community College or something like that. I may be confusing mm-hmm. him with Sean Kemp, but he was at a community college at that point. And, you know, we always just think rookie and we compare rookies, when really you're talking about different guys at different ages. And a 20-year-old in basketball is way different than a 23-year-old. So I think the Lakers have more young talent. It'll take a little longer to blossom, but they didn't have the vets this year that they had on those mid-90s teams.
Yep. Yeah. That's where this offseason is going to be interesting. Like, I think there's more talent in this young core than there was with that young core, or that, I guess, core, right, of Van Exel, Jones, and I guess Peeler kind of fit into that a little bit too. But and Vlade was definitely part of that core. But I think, you know, after this offseason, I would hope that the Lakers are going to be just a better general team than that team, what those teams were in the mid 90s, because like those teams didn't have, this might be slander because Eddie Jones is a legend, but like those teams didn't have a player of like Paul George's caliber, and they didn't have guys of like Brandon Ingram or Lonzo Ball's ceiling, right? They were solid players and they had solid futures, and look, they were one of my favorite teams of all time, but this group that the Lakers have being put together at the top of the lottery, like this is why people are so excited about this group, is because they can be legitimately special in ways that a really exciting mid 90s team wasn't quite capable of reaching that platform.
Dude, Lonzo and Brandon are like 5 years away from their prime.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's insane.
They're 5 years away from it, and so like there are going to be bumps along the way, but like that age element really needs to be thrown in there. Neither of them can legally drink, so like they're so far away from what they're going to be. But like, if you don't have patience, don't draft 19-year-olds. Yeah. Like, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, and if you like, here's what I would never tell people to not be Laker fans. But if you're not going to have patience, like just focus on the Warriors for a couple seasons, and then come back when everybody's back in their primes. Because that's what most Warrior fans have done anyway. But like, but just, you know, just I completely agree. Take your time, be patient with this group. It's going to be a special group. I feel really strongly about that. Thanks everybody for listening. Pete, thanks for hopping on.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.